Hey there, this is John Zombro, and thank you for joining me today on the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. Today in episode number 274, we are moving along in this new year, this thing called 2023, and I really hope that yours is getting off to a good start, a great one, in fact. I would have to say that mine is doing that. I didn't really have a major slowdown at the end of the year, you know, just didn't feel too much of a wind down, nor did I feel a crunch with year end things. And right now I'm neither bored nor exhausted and overwhelmed. I'm kind of in that sweet spot, and it's a range in the middle. Again, I hope that that's where you're finding yourself as well. It is kind of an interesting mixology we try to go through our daily existence with. And I was sitting this morning having a little breakfast, and happened to be some scrambled eggs and leftover yams. It kind of looked good and sounded good. Scram yam, yam scram, maybe something along those lines. And of course, there was a little coffee, as there so often is with me. And I just began to think about nutrition in many different ways. And I thought, well, this is going to make a good topic to talk about. It's an important one to visit often as lifetime athletes and as humans in general. So I made a list, a few notes, and that's what I'm going to share today. And I'm going to call it this: Evolving Thoughts on Human Nutrition. So let's jump into words: nutrition, food, diet, sustenance, nourishment, dining, meal planning, health, longevity, performance. All of those are interesting topics, which definitely occupy the popular mindset in no small manner. And this is for good reason. What we consume can certainly have profound impacts on our beings and their well-being. So this is much more a reflection and opinion than any summation of research. It's not a meta-analysis by any means. I'm going to list out a number of phrases and terms that came to my mind, and then just say what I think. I hope this provides food for thought for you, and of course that pun is totally intended. I thank you. All right, let's start off with a couple of words that were top of mind for me as I began this little project: doctrine and dogma. These words are similar. Doctrine can be viewed as a set of principles held central by a group or organization, such as a church or government. Dogma would generally be the portion of doctrine considered most essential and put forth with the greatest fervor. For some reason, we've always been told what to eat. No matter how far back you go, whether you're thinking about it's your parents or it's the government. Or we've wanted to be told what is best for us to eat. What is most nutritious and healthy for me? What do I need to eat to lose weight? Now, there's an interesting one, isn't it? Because sometimes to lose weight, maybe we don't think about what we're going to eat, maybe not eat. Anyway, sorry for rambling. The problem here is so much of that guidance around nutrition that we've historically received has been relatively context-specific and poorly generalizable, to the entire population. So the phrase "take that with a grain of salt" comes to mind. When I think of a lot of nutritional advice, there are many experts, authorities, and organizations that are so sure that they know what you or I should eat, they will confidently recommend that you should eat, let's say, for example, low protein and calorically restrict for optimal longevity. Most of that advice is based on data taken almost entirely from rodent populations. Or they might say that you must get so much of such and such micronutrient with little regard for your genetics and environment. Or that the ideal macronutrient ratio for every human is fairly rigid and not dynamic with respect to body type and activity patterns. And the problem continues, because a lot of what we have been taught, and in some cases force-fed, I'm throwing the air quotes up there, has proven to be completely wrong. Consideration of dietary dogma requires, it actually mandates, a mix of acceptance and skepticism. Next up, I've got adoption and buy-in. Anyone selling you on a system, whether they stand to make money from it or just sincerely because they believe it's good for you, wants you to be an adopter. Early adopters are those who readily see value in something or are just simply easily convinced. This isn't necessarily bad, especially when said nutritional system or dietary model appears to be helpful. The developers of doctrine and the disseminators of dogma want and need you to adopt their model. They are seeking buy-in. When you are bought in on something, you're all in. You no longer need to question it. In some ways, this makes life easier because it lessens decision-making fatigue. Our brains have enough to deal with on a daily basis, so why not just adopt a set of nutritional principles that seems to work for you? Just keep an open mind and be willing to question and adjust your thinking on food. And most of the time, this can be done respectfully and sensibly. But maybe don't forget the past. Hydrogenated vegetable shortening, made from seed oils and full of trans fats, was originally and quite successfully for decades marketed to us as better than natural products and more healthy for us. I think we all know different. Same goes for margarine and many other examples. With the help of big business, the masses bought it hook, line, and sinker. And as I mentioned, there's lots and lots of examples or cases that we can get into, but I think you get that picture that we would like to be able to say we won't get fooled again, thank you the WHO. Beware finding yourself marching toward a cliff with all the other lemmings. Next up, I've got camps, religions, and belonging. Now, here's a really unique part of human nature. Even the most introverted people among us are still social animals. Being evolutionarily consistent, just think of the clan or the tribe. We have a tendency to want to belong to a collective, to feel that we are a part of something, and to be justified in that association. But don't you find it humorous or even disconcerting that such things as the low-carb camp or the high-protein community even exist? Now, I've certainly done my share of eating low and high-carb and high protein, but I've never felt the need to label my eating as some sort of cool lifestyle. I think people, mostly well-meaning and excited about these things, can sometimes take it a little too far. I've met a lot of folks who say something like, "Hey, I'm keto," or if they want to be really retro, "I'm paleo." And they're usually massively unimpressed when I say that, no, we modern humans are actually Megalean, which is a subdivision of the Quaternary period of the Cenozoic era. Nobody loves a joker, apparently. Where this tendency becomes its worst is when how you eat becomes a pseudo-religion. Now, historically speaking, the religious pursuit of anything, particularly including religion itself, has resulted in war and decimation. A lesson that keeps being repeated, yet never heeded. To be clear, I'm not dissing anyone's actual religion. I'm merely saying don't turn your food into one. Then we've got the need to be right. The goal of science is to be less wrong over time. This is the central tenet of the scientific method, and it's universally recognized. Ego and bias exist everywhere, in all fields and amongst all of us, despite our best efforts. But they seem to be rampant in nutrition science. There's been a steady stream of researchers and government officials whose proclivity has been to cling to dogma with religious zeal. They need grants and funding. They need to be right. Their careers and reputations depend upon it. The problem is, a lot of them have been wrong and have existed in stubborn denial. Science needs to police itself a little better in the human nutrition field. Study designs need to be improved, and the peer review process must be updated. Published papers need to be more trustworthy. Same goes for Simple Sally and Average Joe. We've got to be careful about what we tell others. Whether that's making your kid eat broccoli or telling your aging parent that those blanks, insert your snack food of choice here, are going to kill them. Toxicity is dose dependent. These topics are rolling off my head, but they seem to flow from one to the next, as you can tell. Unless you're talking about cyanide and other poisons, toxins in food, whether real or perceived, there's a rabbit hole, really do have quantity and frequency tied to their noxious characteristics. In other words, certain things may be generally regarded as bad for us, such as junk or fast food, but that's probably true on a dose-specific level. A small amount every once in a while may actually have little to no deleterious effect on metabolic health in most cases. And of course, this is going to vary from person to person based on their genetics, their health status, and age, as well as being dynamic within that same individual in the context of stress, sleep, environmental irritants, and other factors. This all comes down to those bathroom walls in the 70s. A large percentage of public restrooms had these words scribed upon the walls by a graffiti artist. Eat shit and die, motherfucker. No, these vandals were not necessarily visionaries who knew that consuming more than just a little of the standard American diet, hashtag sad, would lead to an early demise. They weren't seers or prognosticators and advising us to use prudence, unfortunately. But the phrase does bring up a point. Whether you're talking about highly processed foods or steer manure used in your garden to grow a carrot that you dust off while you're harvesting the carrots and eat a little bit of that carrot right there, fresh on the site. Well, the point is, and I think we all know this, you can eat a little shit and not get fucked up. But if you pound shit all the time in high and frequent doses, well, you get the point. Generality versus specificity in the human organism. Man, that sounds like a great topic, great title for any number of papers, books, movies. maybe you don't think so. Anyway, these concepts blend and they dance together in very artistic fashion in biology, and I'm referring to generality and specificity. Each lifetime athlete needs a general amount of fuel, rest, stimulus to be activated and make adaptation, and other inputs to thrive. But the ranges are broad. A developing child, a pregnant woman, an Olympic athlete, a middle-aged office worker, and a great-grandparent have basic needs for nutrition. But each of those individuals is a little bit different in what might be ideal or optimal. Let's say the kid needs high micronutrient diversity. Now, the mom similarly has some of those needs, but with some density considerations in a couple areas. The athlete probably is going to require more calories, more carbohydrates, and more protein to fuel that high output level. And probably a little less of those things are indicated for those less active, such as the office worker or possibly the great-grandparent. Now, I obviously work with a lot of fitness and longevity enthusiasts and recreational athletes. Many of the endurance athletes in my stable, my population, my client base, such as runners, backcountry hikers and hunters, triathletes and cyclists, well, they will often characteristically say that they feel flat and lethargic when training at relatively high volumes in the summer heat. It's something we see a lot, and that can come from a lot of different things, but if we're being good detectives and trying to address many factors, oftentimes it will come down to this for those athletes, and I refer to the position statement from the American College of Sports Medicine, which recommends as much as 10 grams of sodium per day for athletes training hard in the heat for several hours. It's actually amazing how rapidly that amount of intake will improve the situation and get them feeling and functioning back at higher levels. Keep in mind, we're monitoring lots of other factors, so it's not like every person who is lethargic needs more sodium. Sometimes they need more sleep, or they need to have a better workload management and recovery attention in their training cycle. Of course, all those things. But the sodium, or quote unquote, the dietary salt intake has been a big one, again, in that specific context. But here's the other thing. I would never recommend that level of salt consumption for someone who's sedentary and known to be a sodium sensitive hypertensive. They have signs and symptoms of metabolic syndrome, or insulin resistance, no, that's not appropriate. And so, of course, adequate hydration and wholesome, if not always whole foods, are valuable for everyone, but we all benefit greatly from personalized adjustments in the diet. How about thoughts versus instincts? I use the word thought in the title, Evolving Thoughts on Human Nutrition. I probably should have stuck with opinions, so I didn't muddy the waters here, but I think this will still make sense. What we know, what we believe, and trust to be fact represents our thoughts about diet. We act on knowledge and information, and we rely upon data and, these days, sometimes devices. Now, research suggests that we need anywhere from about 0.7 to 1.1 grams of protein per pound of lean body mass per day. We can read food labels and we can use trackers to make sure that we're meeting that need. And yep, that is good. It works. But we also need to remember that we are animals. We're beasts that until just a few thousand or maybe even just a few hundred years ago were very reliant on our inner senses and signals for most of our behavior, including eating. Sometimes you get that signal that you need a certain something or a little more or less of it. It's good to explore that, to tune into those messages. Now, keep in mind that most of us modern humans have these hijacked metabolisms that have learned to crave fudge brownies, ice cream, and other goodies. I hesitate to call them baddies. So we need to use that innate intelligence to just separate learned craving from true need. Now, all of that stated, the intricacies of human metabolism can speak to us if we listen. Pregnant women are great examples here. They know intrinsically they need something, and certain foods will taste good to them during pregnancy, or bad, you see that as well, that they normally wouldn't include in their diet. We need to combine our instinctive wisdom with our education for best results in nutrition. And I think that's something that's been missing in the popular mindset regarding food intake for quite a while. Dynamic versus static behavior. I talk about this one a lot with regard to exercise and that seasonality model, which I've developed over time, and I use it in much of my programming. It's actually a modern contrivance that much of our society believes you should have the same schedule, the same routines, the same workouts, and the same diet all year round. That is actually very evolutionarily inconsistent. We're wired with our hormones and our neurotransmitters to require, seek, and consume different types of food in differing amounts throughout the year. This consideration around diet is just beginning to emerge in the field of circadian biology. We're not inventing something new here. We're rediscovering something very old. And actually, I'm going to put it out there like this. A lot of weight gain, what is often called creeping obesity in some literature, is a result of people eating in the same patterns for decades. You know, perhaps with too many calories overall and processed foods being a little high in their diet, but they're actually not being instinctive, and they're being very rote in their procedures. And over time, yeah, that can lead to a creeping obesity, but it's entirely preventable. Simply eating more when you need it and less when you don't is probably the greatest secret, not actually a secret, in weight and body composition maintenance. But again, I think that's overlooked way too much in our society. Realistic assessments is a good way to sum things up. You believe what you want to believe. Oh, you believe what you want to believe. Oh, thank you, Tom Petty. You are so great, the late Tom Petty. You do believe what you want to believe, and so do I. We all do. But it's important to not be delusional about many of the ideas that I've just discussed here. And putting too much thought and emotion and worry, actually, into your diet and every little thing you eat can possibly be counterproductive. I think there's some examples of this. Have you ever noticed how, like, the happy, content person can eat some cake and not seem to get fat or sick, but the depressed or stressed out person will sometimes become obese and diabetic? Now, that's an overstatement, for example, there, but you get the picture. Pretty much how you look, how you feel, and how you perform says it all. This certainly represents not only what you eat, but how you train, how you sleep, how you live your life. However, what goes down the old pie hole is definitely an important consideration. There's just some irony in all of this because many people will say that they do not look, feel, and perform their best when you ask them. Yet, even when you make a gentle suggestion that, hey, changing your food up can really help the situation. The walls of resistance will come up. I think we need to just be honest and open about that. So in all honesty from me, that's probably only a little bit of what I have to say about nutrition today. I'm certain I'll be changing my mind on some things. Some of the things I discuss or different things that I didn't, and learning more about others. I hope what I did, however, is offer you up some information, maybe a little amusement with some of the comments there, and possibly some opportunity for evolution in your own thoughts on human nutrition. So thanks for being with me today. As always, I really appreciate you. I appreciate the community that we've created around longevity and performance and lifetime athleticism and the athletic avenue into the best life lived. If you're interested in learning a bit more about any of those things, like nutrition, like coaching, like blending your whole lifestyle and training together, like viewing yourself as an athlete, then by all means, check out some of the resources that are totally free and available here at thelifetimeathlete.com. And if I can help you in a coaching capacity with your nutrition to personalize it and also to customize the entire lifestyle, which makes everything work seamlessly together and best. Coach Jay-Z signing out from the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. Have a fantastic day.